Live from Chicago and Cleveland, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of Roman innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring live reports from yours truly in Cleveland and in-studio commentary by Philip Beverly, Jeannie Ives, Chris Roebling, and tonight's guest host, a veteran political analyst for WGN Television in Chicago, Paul Lisnick.
And good evening, everybody. Welcome to Beyond the Beltway. This is Paul Lisnick, and it is my pleasure and honor to be sitting in for Bruce Dumont today. Bruce is not taking the night off laying on a beach somewhere. Bruce is in Cleveland, where he will be reporting throughout the show, letting us know the latest of what is happening as Republicans get ready for their national convention taking place starting tomorrow. Actually, sort of starting tonight, as we'll hear from Bruce in just a little bit. And let me introduce you to my guests so you know a little bit more about them. Joining me this evening is a longtime friend of the program, Chris Roebling, a former Republican Commissioner of Elections for the Chicago Board of Election Commissions. He's a former Executive Director of the Cook County Republican Party, a corporate communications consultant. He's got his own firm, because that's what happens when you're powerful, you get your own firm. He's a former President of the U.S. House Republican Press Secretaries Association. He's managed federal, state, local campaigns. Chris Roebling, so glad you are with me tonight.
That was somebody else's bio.
Yeah, I know. I make some of that stuff up, but you're looking
Thank
good.
You. You're making me sound good.
You're not alone for the Republicans, Mr. Roebling, because Representative Jeannie Ives is here. She is a Republican. She's in her second term as an Illinois state representative. She graduated from West Point. That's like serious stuff. With a Bachelor of Science in Economics, a veteran who served in the Army as a transportation officer and ROTC instructor. The mother of five children, her oldest son serving in the Army. Her second oldest son begins naval flight training next week. Quite the military family. Representative, welcome.
Thank you.
And there is another side to this coin, representing the Democratic point of view, Professor Philip Beverly, an associate professor of political science at Chicago State University. He's been on the faculty there since 1991. He teaches courses in American politics, including campaigns and elections. He's considered by some a provocateur, a zealous supporter of the First Amendment in higher education, former Air Force officer. Philip has professional interests in national defense and homeland security issues. And I'm your host, Paul Lisnick. I am the political analyst for WGN-TV, host of Politics Tonight every weeknight at 5:30 on CLTV.
So,
well, and thank you, Chris. And welcome one and all. Again, Bruce Dumont is going to join us, actually, at 15 minutes after the hour and again next hour. But, you know, as we get into the convention, we cannot ignore the news of the day. And so as we have our listeners listening globally right now, and by the way, let me invite people to call in if you want to chime in, 800-723-8289. More police officers, three at this moment, have been killed in Baton Rouge, the site of terrible work before. Other officers, one critically injured. These numbers can change as time is going on. Chris Roebling, how does this impact the Republican conventions and the Democratic conventions coming up, for that matter? Because President Obama, in his comments, seems to feel it will. He asked everybody to control their rhetoric.
I think, unfortunately, we have to admit that there is a war on police that has been effectuated, and that it is a very sad day for America. And I think everyone's thoughts and prayers go to the three grieving families and, of course, the many friends in the police department. I've heard statements by both the sheriff down there and the mayor, and one is more, I would say, evocative of very strong emotions than the next. I think that in terms of the political element, I do want to say I thought that for the first time in a very long time, President Obama made a terrific statement today. He spoke of the unacceptability of what happened. He also did not go into axe grinding relative to one of his pet projects, which is increasing gun control. I will say that I think that in terms of November, since you ask, I think it's awful to discuss this. I don't even want to get into the November thing right now. Do we have to?
Yeah. No, we absolutely
okay,
not.
Good. All right.
Let me go to Jeannie, Representative Ives, because you know, we're just coming out of five cops being killed in Dallas. We have this situation here. But let's tie it to the convention. Because Ohio has an open carry law, which means people who choose to have weapons can carry them around in Ohio. I think a lot of people were actually surprised to learn that they had that law. Governor John Kasich was asked to suspend that law for the scope of the convention. He said no, that would be unconstitutional. Is Cleveland a problem waiting to happen, do you think?
You know, not if you talk to some of the people that have done the security screening there and what they've set up so far. I mean, obviously, a state like Illinois isn't comfortable with open carry. Other states are, and they've learned how to deal with that. Sometimes more guns make things safer, not less safe. But you know what? Going back to the Baton Rouge thing and the Dallas cops that who died as well, the thing that, as somebody who is a veteran, the thing that disturbs me so much is that both of these attackers had prior military service. And I don't know if anybody's closing the loop on that and wondering what's going on here. But that is very concerning for me. And it's a stain, I think, on the military that these two had prior military service. I'd like to hear more from Bruce, too, who's on the floor there in the convention about the security that he's seen and how he feels about it.
And we're going to do that in just a little bit. Professor Philip Beverly, you know, there are police officers being killed. But, of course, what triggered even before those incidents were African-Americans being killed in cop-involved shootings, police-involved shootings. And I don't think we can ignore those settings as well for all of this. What kind of interplay are you seeing between them? The discussion now is going to be about police officers not being safe on the streets, but, of course, also getting triggered by the underlying concepts of the Black Lives Matter movement as well.
And I think part of the struggle here is to try and reconcile those two things because they're both horrible. The level of violence is just as violence is really unacceptable. And when cops aren't safe, then other people aren't safe as well. What I worry about is sort of short-sighted, fear-based decision-making. And somebody's got to take a step back and not rush to, oh, we got to take everybody's guns away, because that's sort of problematic, a rush to show that they're doing something. And I know certain politicians have to be seen as doing something instead of maybe thinking the thing through. And the other thing is, how do I, as a citizen, as a community member, maybe de-escalate my rhetoric or my activity while still presenting the message of Black Lives Matter, right? And not being as combative. Can I meet people in a different rhetorical space than a combative space?
You know, and Chris Roebling, when you know the Orlando shooting happened at Pulse nightclub, and you know Donald Trump and others came out and said, you know, if people in that club had guns, this would have had a different ending. He said that in several scenarios. Well, when you're killing police officers, they are armed. Does that at all negate the argument that if the folks being shot were armed, we wouldn't have this problem?
No, I don't think that it does. These policemen, as I understand it, and we're very new to this story.
That's right.
Apparently, we're set up for an ambush. And so this is profoundly different from, say, Dallas, where police were working with the community to preserve associational and speech rights. And so there was a march going on, and then somebody took advantage of that, as Jeannie points out, unfortunately, a very highly trained former military person took advantage of that situation. This, two elements, conspiracy element, because it is very clear that there was more than one shooter in this case, and then the ambush element. So they were laying in wait.
This is tough. But you know what? Our listeners probably have some thoughts they want to share with us. I'm going to invite you to do that. 1-800-723-8289. People listening around the world at beyondthebeltway.com. We're live on POTUS. We're at 1590 AM. So join the conversation. Give us your thoughts about this issue. But after the break, we're going to go to Bruce Dumont. He's going to be live in Cleveland. We're going to see what's going on there. Stay with us.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much. Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
You're listening to Beyond the Beltway, coming to you live from Chicago and Cleveland. And once again, tonight's guest host, Paul Lisnick.
Hey, thank you, Bruce. Good to be with you this evening. We are going to go to Bruce Dumont, who is live in Cleveland.
We're talking to Bruce Buchanan, who was a farmer from Indiana.
Benton County, Indiana.
Benton County, Indiana. And you have an interesting story to talk about Governor Pence, that he's a unique candidate for vice president. Why?
He is. Most of the guys at this position who are even considered to be on the ticket, on a national ticket, don't have the experiences I feel like that our governor does. Because not only has our governor been a wonderful man from a purely political standpoint, but he reaches out to all facets of our Indiana people. Last fall, he came out with on his own idea, wasn't my idea, came to my farm in Benton County, Indiana, Fowler, Indiana, and he came out there to have a community meeting. And most of the time, he said 15, 20 people show up. We had 150 people on my farm today. And to cap off the day, he wanted to run a combine.
Yes,
so
yes,
I have two 12-row John Deere harvesters. And he got in the seat with me on one of them, and we ran. We picked corn for 1 mile. And I convinced this gentleman, so he wasn't a little bit tepid, but he was able to unload corn on the go from the combine as it's
maybe
going
the first vice presidential candidate that ever did. And he can shovel manure.
And that makes him unique. He's done that too, I'm sure.
He may have to do some more.
And he might have to do that. And I'm sure he's uniquely qualified only because he's on a 12-row kicker through the field and unloaded corn while he was driving down through the field.
Bruce, good luck. Well, thanks very much.
You bet.
Reporting from Cleveland, I'm Bruce Dumont.
All right. So, and Bruce is with us. Continue. So, Bruce, an interesting interview you had. It suggests to me that Mike Pence may just be, Governor Pence, may just be the answer for those who were skeptical about Donald Trump, adding in the sort of everyman person that Trump isn't perceived to be for some people, right?
Right. No, I think the people that I've spoken with just in the last hour at this big welcoming reception here, literally right on the banks of Lake Erie with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame behind me, it seems to have affected a lot of the Cruz people, and those were the people that that Mike Pence was put on the ticket for to attract them. And so far, it seems to be working, but of course the opposition research will get out there, and the campaign will go on for the next 113 days.
Bruce, Chris Roebling, great to be in touch. And if you get a chance, don't miss Jim Morrison's Boy Scout uniform at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Okay.
It's pretty amazing stuff over there. Jimi Hendrix has got a big collection, too. Anyway, I got to ask you, what are people saying about how this convention is going to look on TV compared to what I think most people agree was the disastrous Tampa convention of Mitt Romney?
I think they're enthused about it. The word that I would hear, because obviously it's been so much in advance about how split it's going to be, I've heard a lot of people complaining about the VIP Republicans who aren't here, John Kasich, and a lot of governors of states who have not supported Donald Trump. There's a sour grapes aspect, at least that's been leveled against them by some of the people that I've spoken with, in the last hour at this welcoming reception. And so, again, I can also report, I mean, obviously heavy security, as you can imagine. Back just moments ago, Secret Service sniffer dogs were walking through the crowd here, which, again, it's the staging of this event is, it is the most spectacular of any convention I've been at. It's very expansive. No one seems really, there's no press of people, and you've got Science Museum on one side, and you have the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which I will head into in a matter of moments to join with all the delegates from all of the United States and the media. They've combined the media party with the delegates, which normally they don't do. They try to keep those two forces apart.
Hey, Bruce, can you talk? This is Jeannie Ives here. Can you talk to us a little bit more about what you think this security situation looks like? We just had the Baton Rouge unfortunate incident.
Yeah.
Just tragic, isn't it, actually? Occur. Do you see, and also, there's been a lot of talk about the militarization of a police force. Do you see an overt militarization there of their police force?
I do not, Jeannie, see it as yet. Now, again, I'm staying with the Illinois delegation. We're out near the airport along with the Arkansas delegation. So we are a long way. Normally, you'd complain about being so far away from the hall. Nobody's doing that at this time. So it was a very easy road into The party this evening, again, we're probably now probably a mile and a half from the Quicken Loan Center, where everything will take place tomorrow night. But so far, you see you see the police presence on television. I have not really sensed it yet in Cleveland, but there was also a report that 62 official protests have been registered with the city of Cleveland, and there are 16 additional ones that have no permits at all, and they have pledged that they're going to come to Cleveland, including some groups that have anarchy in their heart.
Bruce, it's Phil Beverly. I've got a question. You just talked about the folks who won't be attending, certain governors and certain representatives in that. Mm-hmm. Do you see that as a sort of symbolic protest, and that after the convention's over, they'll get back on side and start doing what's necessary to sort of pull the party together? Or do you imagine this will be sort of sour grapes for the rest of the campaign?
No, I think it's going to be sour grapes for the rest of the campaign. And I would say that in many of these cases, these are candidates that are more concerned about their own futures than they are necessarily about winning the presidency in 2016. I mean, they are concerned, especially in large urban areas. They're concerned about whether or not, if they were to be enthusiastic for Donald Trump, does it basically erase any opportunity for them ever to get Hispanic votes or for votes from suburban women or other groups that may have been offended by Donald Trump. So, no, I don't think it's going to go away. But, again, the sense amongst the troops, and, again, keep in mind, there's far more grassroots people. I've run into a lot of people who are coming to their first convention. And so this is more of a grassroots convention thus far that I've experienced than necessarily all those with all the ribbons and the official RNC delegates and elected officials. I haven't seen as many of them this year.
Bruce, let me ask you, what happened today, the murder of the police officers in Baton Rouge,
yeah.
Are you hearing from people there? I mean, is that news being circulated? They're discussing it, especially with the presence of the open carry law, or is that not really on the tip of people's minds tonight?
It was in the Illinois delegation today in the hotel when people were checking in. There was a lot of discussion of it. Again, there hasn't been too much of discussion here this evening, but again, It does weigh on the minds of everybody because we already have a tense security situation. It's only going to make it more tense, and police officers obviously will be very concerned about their safety, as well they should be. And yet there are those out there that, you know, regardless of their, you know, political persuasion, whether they are anarchists or they're part of, you know, some, you know, more inflammatory group that wants to overthrow the government. I mean, there's some people, there's some bad actors that will be in Cleveland, and how they act and how the police react, most of it's going to be recorded on television. And really, the ultimate verdict is going to be made by those who are watching television all over the United States and over the world, just as was the case in 1968 when the police and the demonstrators that came to disrupt Chicago basically affected the Republican candidate Richard Nixon and thrust him into the White House.
Bruce, and that's exactly what I'm thinking right now. You've got Trump out there calling himself the law and order president. You've got the upheaval in Turkey. You've had things happen just, you know, in Nice, Orlando, right. Dallas. I mean, if these protesters get out of hand and it turns really bad, which is just horrific for that to happen in America in this day and age. I mean, it could play into Trump's hand, you know, in the November election. And nobody wants to make any of this violence play into anybody's hand. It's just bad all around. But the truth is, he is the law and order president, not only, mm-hmm. I guess, from an American standpoint, but when you're looking internationally now, internationally there is so much disruption occurring right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just riff on that for a second, Bruce. Within 45 minutes or an hour of the report out of Baton Rouge this morning, Trump tweeted his condolences to the families of the fallen Baton Rouge police officers. The Hillary Clinton campaign then saw fit to send out an email for a fundraiser, and then it sent out, 3 hours or 4 hours later, it sent out an email that was attacking the list of speakers at the Republican convention. And it was only 6 or 7 hours after this thing, this terrible event happened down in Baton Rouge, that she finally came out with anything acknowledging the loss of the cops or the impact on their families or the city.
But it's a tone-deaf campaign from their standpoint. I think they're a tone-deaf campaign.
Bruce, let's hear from Bruce about what your reaction to that.
No, I think if all those time frames are correct, and I assume they are, Chris, it's another example of Hillary maybe missing a political moment and being tone deaf, as Jeannie had said. You have a situation. You have a Republican candidate who has announced himself as the law and order candidate. He is certainly perpetuating an image that he has as a leader at a time when Hillary is emerging and trying to portray herself as a strong international leader to deal with the international issues. But whether or not she has a tightrope to walk, because, you know, she wants to acknowledge that police officers do a wonderful job, but on the other hand, she's very concerned about going too far and not remembering those who maybe have been, victims of police overreaction in the last, for many years, but certainly in the last couple of weeks. So, she can't be too tough on crime. It's easy for Donald Trump to be tough on crime, as I think he should. Hillary Clinton's got to be, she's got to play a political game somewhat in being sort of a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Whether the American people will accept that in a time when I think they want to be protected, the public will decide that in 113 days.
All right, Bruce, I appreciate it. We're going to be checking back with you in just a little while. But for now, we're going to take a break. This is Beyond the Beltway. And you can call in if you want to join the conversation. It's 1-800-723-8289. Hang with us. We're with you in just a few minutes.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 11 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
You're listening to Beyond the Beltway, coming to you live from Chicago and Cleveland. And once again, tonight's guest host, Paul Lisnick.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. Bruce will be back with us at 15 after the next hour, live from Cleveland. Representative Jeannie Ives is here tonight, a Republican serving her second term in Illinois. And Jeannie, I want to ask you, you are not at the convention. You're here. So you're not in Cleveland. Why not?
I didn't even actually apply to become a delegate for any of the 17 Republican candidates. It just didn't interest me. I need to serve my constituents. It's actually very expensive to go there and be a delegate as well. I figured what's going to happen is going to happen. I just didn't.
Now, you had other horses in this race. Trump was not your guy. You wanted Scott Walker.
I wanted Rick Perry first, Scott Walker. I liked a strong governor who's shown real results.
And when push came to shove, it was Ted Cruz for you.
Yes, actually, I endorsed Ted Cruz. When it came down to Illinois and it was really a Cruz-Trump deal, I mean, I like Ted Cruz a lot. I've liked him from the beginning, too. He was always in the mix for me. Strict constitutionalist, somebody who anybody can feel comfortable with because your rights are going to be protected. Didn't matter your race, religion.
If Cruz was the nominee, would you be in Cleveland right now?
I still would not be in Cleveland. Illinois is a disaster financially, and, I need to serve my constituents here. So I would not be in – I would have been more excited about the convention overall. I just would not have been there still.
Chris Roebling, Republican strategist, you always support the Republican nominee, but Trump was not your guy.
No, he was not my guy. And I'm not in Cleveland.
That's
because
right.
Because our other media home screwed up the – all of the Secret Service stuff. And so I didn't get my credentials for the...
you were going to go.
I had the, well, I wanted to go. I thought it was going. I had the press credentials, but I didn't get the Secret Service. I called Senator Kirk's office, and they tried, but couldn't get it.
No go. Well, that's good because it means you're here with me.
It's good because it does cost a fortune, and, you know, it is a lot of running around, and it's a lot of hanging out in coffee shops. The actual time at the convention, you know, the last one I went to was St. Paul, which was phenomenal.
All right, Professor Philip Beverly, Chicago State, you probably were not going to go to the Republican convention.
I was going to take a pass on Cleveland, especially after that NBA result.
Yeah, maybe Philadelphia is more in line with you the following week. But here's what I want to ask you. You know, there's a lot of discussion about the fact that, you know, when this election comes down to it, this could be, if it's about Donald Trump, if it's about Hillary Clinton, that may dictate what goes on here. Donald Trump is declaring himself, as Jeannie has talked earlier, as the law and order president in a time where every week seems to bring us another violent incident. Hillary Clinton takes the Obama-like diplomatic approach to all of that. Does she pay a price for that if this continues?
I think it depends on how much it escalates. And when we were talking off air about if the campaign is about her, she's going to be sort of in trouble. The one criticism of a few that I might have of Senator Clinton is everything seems to be a political calculation for her. After Ferguson, she was remarkably silent. Didn't say anything. Didn't say, I support the police. Didn't say, I support the – didn't say anything. And I just thought, you missed an opportunity to demonstrate some leadership. And so that's going to be problematic. If the campaign's going to be about the Donald, he's going to lose because he's not a disciplined candidate. And he's sort of peaks and valleys. He shows some – presidential qualities, and then he goes back to who he is normally.
Okay, but we have actually the exact polar opposite in Donald Trump, who is not making a political calculation every time he speaks. And so his, I guess, authenticity is obviously resonated with Republican voters. He won over millions of them. He's obviously going to be our nominee. I mean, he wasn't my choice either. I've already stated that. But he doesn't. People are upset with establishment political calculations, and they can read Hillary Clinton every time she goes out to speak, that her words are measured, they're pinched, they're uptight, and they are very calculated. And people don't like that. That's why Donald Trump is getting as much traction as he's gotten.
I think it is the wrong time to represent the party of government. And this relates to what Jeannie was saying in the last segment. You know, domestically, what do we have? We've got state governments that are in debt to their ears, to their eyeballs. We've got big city public school systems that are failing miserably. We've got a war on the police. What's happening internationally? Internationally, you get Nice, you get Turkey, you get the downing of an Egyptian airliner. People are saying government has – so in Europe, you get some of these – admittedly, some – movements are a little crazy, a little nativist and worrisome, and probably funded by Putin because he hates the European Union and wants a free hand throughout Eastern Europe. But you also get folks who are very thoughtful, very responsible, voting in the United Kingdom to exit the European Union. Government has not performed, and I believe that Hillary represents government.
Sure. Let's chime in on Mike Pence a little bit because he is the news of the week in terms of getting the veep nod from Donald Trump. You know, when you look at Pence's record in Congress, he was there for 12 years. He also voted for the Iraq War back in 2002. So, you know, here's Donald Trump.
As did Hillary.
That's my point.
Right. Yeah.
Donald Trump's huge attack on Hillary is that bad judgment call of voting for the Iraq War. He picks a guy who also voted for the Iraq War. Is there any hypocrisy in that?
Well, Trump doesn't know anything about international relations.
Which, okay? Unfortunately, period. Is the most important job of the president.
Which is the most important job of the president. And this is one of the reasons why he's my 17th of 17 as well. So you have a situation where I believe that was one of Trump's unpardonable. And I've got to support Trump because we've got to stop Hillary. But Trump said awful things about John McCain. He said some crazy things about a reporter with MS. And he said crazy things about George Bush and going into the Iraq War. I think Pence is ballast in the bottom of the Trump and Republican and anti-Hillary boat because he has made state government work. And as a congressman, he was out there for freedom, for the economy, for job creation, for growth, and for limiting the size of the federal government.
Jeannie, did Pence give you some comfort in the pick because he brings the conservative values to the ticket?
Oh, yes. I'm a true conservative. And just like Mike Pence has said in the past, he's a Christian, he's conservative, and then he's a Republican in that order. So, I mean, I abide by that. I think that's a great thing. Back to Hillary, though. I mean, if this is somebody who has international experience, look, I don't want her type of experience when I have two sons in the military. Because she left people behind in Benghazi. She's created uproar around the state. Putin could not be more emboldened by doing what he wants to do. China is actually disrupting the South China Seas and going on some military adventures there that we have to keep in check. It's a very dangerous world out there. And the last person we need is somebody like Hillary Clinton, who could not answer the 3 a.m. call when she was required to as Secretary of State.
So there you go, Phil Beverly. There's the other side to the fact that many say Hillary Clinton is the most well-prepared of anybody since John Adams or John Quincy Adams to become president.
That was Obama saying that.
I think the most prepared in a technical sense, and there's nobody alive who hasn't been president that's prepared to be president. It is the singular experience. So anybody who says, oh, I'm the one best prepared, no, you're not. So stop with that sort of rhetoric, because only George Herbert Walker Bush, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter know what it takes to be president. The others are pretenders, and so let's talk about something else instead of that. And as far as Mike Pence being selected to be a great pick, I'm sitting here and I feel really stupid right now. I can't remember who the Republican VP for Mitt Romney was.
It was Paul Ryan.
Paul Ryan. Oh, isn't that fun?
What's he doing now?
That's how unimportant the VP pick is. It's nice to talk about it this time of the year. Oh, who are they going to pick? And we got to have something to talk about. But at the end of the day, you don't even remember them. It's the least important job on the planet.
Although Sarah Palin, some would argue, may have torpedoed John McCain's campaign.
But most people believe that. They do believe that the VP is important for the convention. It's important immediately afterward. But really, when the November campaign starts heating up again, it really is a Trump-Hillary decision. It's a binary choice. And for me, I'm all in for Trump.
Yeah, I want to emphasize what Jeannie was just saying about Hillary's record. Benghazi's bad enough, okay? But when you look at the 100,000 civilians died in Iraq, and that's terrible. It was a terrible tragedy. Although we got a functioning, democratically elected government in Iraq, it was handed to Barack Obama, and he trashed it. But when you look at what Obama and Hillary did in their four and a half years together, Libya is an absolute categorical disaster that is truly being covered up by the mainstream press and the international media so that it is not used against Hillary in this election. Syria is a complete disaster. Yemen was a betrayal of an American ally that was actually helping the United States, helping the Western world against terrorism. And Obama looked the other way to allow Iran to go into Yemen on the other side of our closest Arab ally, which is Saudi Arabia.
So, Chris, you're doing what Republicans should do. You're putting it at the feet of Obama, at the feet of Hillary Clinton. I get it.
Yeah.
However, it's sort of interesting because Donald Trump himself, he put a lot of that, the Iraq War, the 2001, the 9/11, he put it at the feet of George Bush, and he's the nominee.
And that's the interesting thing. We've got a problem in Syria because we had a problem in Iraq because at the time, that wasn't a place that we needed to go. We needed to finish Afghanistan. We needed to eliminate the Taliban and eliminate the possibility of terrorist training camps and the instability in that region, especially in the border regions with Pakistan. And George W. Bush took his eye off the ball, doing what his father said don't do, which he didn't do in 1991, which was going and take out Saddam Hussein.
So Monday night quarterbacking only works does it only work one way or not? That's what you're doing. Now, if President Obama wanted to be a Monday night quarterback, he could have seen what happened with Bush in Iraq, and he could have known that you can't just exit the country like Iraq and leave behind a chaos. You have to stay there a long time and solidify the region and make sure the government is operating. And Obama completely pulled out of Iraq, which allowed ISIS to come in and take over those regions and create horrific situations.
It didn't come in. It exists because it was already there.
There was no government structure to actually hold the ground. And that's what infantry does. Do you know what infantry does? It takes ground and it holds the ground until you've got the political structure in place. And Obama doesn't understand one thing about military strategy or the purpose of the military.
45
500 dead Americans in Iraq, were we willing to go to do exactly that?
We're going to continue the conversation. We're going to take a break. But here's the thing. A lot of talk about Trump and Clinton. You know what? There are other options for people. There's former Governor Gary Johnson of the Libertarian Party. There's Dr. Jill Stein of the Green Party. There's some people that want to chime in. We're going to do it when Beyond the Beltway continues after this.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
You're listening to Beyond the Beltway, coming to you live from Chicago and Cleveland. And once again, tonight's guest host, Paul Lisnick.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. Bruce Dumont is live in Cleveland. He's going to be with us a little bit later on again in the show. I'm hanging with Representative Jeannie Ives, Chris Roebling, Professor Philip Beverly. But I got to tell you, we've had all this discussion about Trump and Hillary for good reason. There is a libertarian candidate named Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico, two-term governor. He has been he's been on my Politics Tonight show. And here's what's really fascinating, I think, about him, because he's after the anti-Trump vote. That's how he put himself out there. But I asked him one night, I said, you know, what about the anti-Hillary people who supported Bernie? And he said, you know, Paul, I went online and took that test you can take to see what candidate you line up with. He says, I lined up 99% with myself. That made sense, although I did wonder what percent didn't work. He said, but second, he said, I lined up. Right, right. He said, second, I lined up most with Bernie Sanders. And I thought, now that's the good direction to go in terms of the pitch, because that's the other group he's got to resonate with. There are people out there who are huge, big Gary Johnson supporters. Jason from D.C., he's listening to us on Sirius Radio. Hey, Jason, you are a Gary Johnson guy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the interesting thing is, could we all agree that any poll going forward that does not include Gary Johnson and Jill Stein is a null and void poll? I mean, I keep hearing, oh, Trump's up by two, Hillary's up by 2-1. And I'm like, but they're polling at 36-38% in some of these polls. The margin of victory in this stuff, and you know, take a state like Utah, okay?
Jason, okay, fine. So you're upset about polls. Let's talk about substance. What makes, in your mind, Gary Johnson a better choice than the other three?
Well, look, if you want continual war, you can go with Trump and Clinton, okay? If you want more government and messing in your lives, you can go with both of them.
Well, yeah,
they're
but,
both that way.
And Jason, let me go back to Chris Roebling here for a second, because, Chris, you work campaigns. You follow all this stuff. And Jason makes an interesting point. This is not as though it's, you know, Trump or Hillary up by 20 points. And this is a close race. There's a lot of undecided people. And Jason, I think, is telling us, when you add Gary Johnson, maybe not Jill Stein, but one or both of them into that, the dynamics begin to change in the polls, and that is important.
Well, okay, there's a lot of methodology behind this, but just two quick points. Number one is, are you talking to voters, or are you talking to people? Are you talking to likely voters or to voters? Then the other
thing
is—
Getting them on your cell phones,
right,
get, I mean, all those
right
issues.
Well, you've got that as well. But, I mean, when you're talking to voters or to likely voters and you're doing a national poll, then you've got to go through the thing about, am I talking to a voter in a state where Gary Johnson is on the ballot? Okay, you have to sort of keep that kind of consistency rolling.
He says he'll be on the ballot in all 50 states. Jill Stein says she will be too.
I'm not exactly
if
sure
they are,
that
let's
that's going to happen.
Are. Okay.
If they are, and if they are known. So this the kind of head-to-head that you see, it comes later in the poll than awareness. And if no one is aware of them, then they're not figuring into the choice that is being made between the candidates of whom they are aware.
So this is really, in my opinion, the big problem that both Trump and Hillary have. They have to get their message out because they have so many unfavorables, both candidates, high unfavorables. So if you're going into the polls and you're like, well, you know, I've got some other races I need to vote on. The president's race choice is a disaster. I don't like either one. And you actually go ahead and vote for Gary Johnson or Jill Stein. Then you've made that choice. So really, Trump and Hillary need to make voters understand you have a binary choice here, really, in terms of who's actually going to win. So do you want Trump or do you want Hillary? Because a vote for either one, really, it's going to hurt either candidate.
You know, and Phil Beverly, let me ask you with the Gary Johnson effect. Let's face it. This should have been Hillary Clinton's to lose, right? With Donald Trump as the nominee, most people would have said Hillary wipes the slate with him, except she's not. So does Gary Johnson present a problem? Is this a Ralph Nader situation?
No, I don't think it's a Nader situation. I think, unfortunately, it's 1992 all over again. I think we're
Ross Perot.
Yeah, we're going to have to resign ourselves to the fact that whoever wins is unlikely to win with a majority. They'll win with the plurality, but they won't win with a majority. And so, exactly. And so the challenge that the winner will have is bring together the majority, because the majority didn't vote for them. And they've also got to consider, what is the Congress going to look like at this point? There's some who are saying that the Republican Party stands a really good chance of losing the Senate. I don't know about that. Those are going to be some hard seats to turn. There's going to be a lot of money spent on those. But this is not going to be easy. We better be thinking about what happens after November.
Well, that's a good point, Phil. And honestly, if we don't have a candidate that wins the majority, I think you see a greater polarization in America, and it's already bad enough.
Oh, Chris Robling, you don't think there's a polarization no matter who wins and how much they win by? I mean, does that in this day and age, does that even matter?
I think that it does. I think that one of the things that you see after every presidential election, almost like clockwork, the folks who are in the party of the winner say, this was a mandate. And the folks who are in the party of the loser say, there is no mandate. And so there is a polarization that I think is built into the system. I would hope that you know, we see a big Trump victory, maybe not in terms of percentage, but in terms of states. If you win a lot of states, that's a significant event. And so I'm hoping that something comes out of this, because I think we need that kind of direction to begin to heal some of these fissures in our society.
You know, you raise the point of polls, and Phil Beverly, it makes a lot of sense in terms of when you look at the national polls, it's so close. She's up by two. He's up by two. It doesn't really matter. What matters is the Electoral College vote and count.
And I would imagine that Trump will win more states than Hillary, and I imagine that Hillary will win the larger states, the ones that count. I don't envision Trump winning New York, California. I just don't see that.
But he's contesting Florida.
And
he'll
he's
win
contesting
Texas.
Florida. And Republicans win Texas.
Well, Democrats win California. I mean, I think it is so condescending to dismiss Texas and Florida. You know, Florida's a battleground. But,
I don't
dismiss
it.
So we're not going to win New York. We're not going to win California as of today. I mean, things could change. I don't disagree with that. But it is not insignificant to win Texas and to win Florida.
Does Mike Pence put Indiana in the Trump column? And I say that
yes.
Because Pence's own numbers in Indiana aren't that strong.
Here's an untold story.
I don't believe that.
Well, here's an untold story out of Indiana. First of all, I think that Pence was doing well for reelection. He certainly had some issues to overcome. I think he'd overcome them. Number two is he's got a great lieutenant governor who is going to be the candidate for governor, and I think you're going to see a strong campaign in Indiana, and that will be along with Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan,
Wisconsin. Yep.
All right, we're going to continue this conversation. We're going to take a break, but this is Beyond the Beltway. Join the conversation after these words.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida, so why not experience it as it was meant to be, where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sit cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels. Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Saturdays at 4:30 and Sundays at 11 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
You're listening to Beyond the Beltway, coming to you live from Chicago and Cleveland. And once again, tonight's guest host, Paul Lisnick.
Hey, thank you, Bruce Dumont. Bruce will be in Cleveland live for us at 15 after the hour. So if you're missing him, don't worry. He's going to be with us. He's going to tell us what's going on. I am WGN-TV's political analyst, and I'm so happy tonight that I'm being joined by my buddy over at WGN-TV, Chris Roebling, who is the Republican strategist for WGN and joins
me on... Republican analyst.
Oh, all right. Analyst, strategist. You know, you're everything,
you're
Chris.
The every man, but I'm the...
Literally. Representative Jeannie Ives, Republican, serving her second term, is with us today, a West Point graduate. I think that's really impressive. You probably have uniforms and everything at home. And Associate Professor of Political Science, Philip Beverly from Chicago State University, where he's been teaching a very long time. So welcome to all of you. And let me invite everybody, call in, join the conversation, as some have, 1-800-723-8289, as we go globally around the world on POTUS and 1590 AM. And all sorts of other ways, beyondthebeltway.com. So the themes of this convention, of course, it culminates with Make America Great Again. That's Trump's theme. But, you know, every night has its own theme. Tomorrow night, it's Make America Safe. I'm just curious. We don't know. I mean, I have to believe it's about international topics, but I have a funny feeling we're going to be hearing domestic topics as well. You know, Phil, I'm going to come to you with this, because when you think about it, with all that's going on in this country and around the world, Trump should have been a long shot. It's beginning to look as though the world is taking place and being made for his election.
Yeah, I've heard some fairly critical comparisons to Silvio Berlusconi, for example, thinking that a strong man, a Putin-type character, is just going to be able to impose his will. That's just not how our country works. He is not going to be able to make anybody safe. Citizens make themselves safe. I think Jeannie said something earlier that is unpopular in a lot of quarters in this country, and people may, you know, want to criticize me for repeating it. Maybe we don't have enough people with guns here. Maybe we would be safer protecting ourselves than relying on protection outside of ourselves. And so looking at candidates who are going to, you know, trumpet that kind of rhetoric may actually end up being counterproductive for them.
Pun might have been intended there. Chris Roebling, you know, you said before, because Trump doesn't know anything about international affairs, Are you concerned if he becomes president? He's got to handle the world. Or do you think what some people thought with George W. Bush, he's going to surround himself with people who understand?
Thank you. I think that Trump is a brilliant guy. You don't show up in a place like Chicago with $500 million in your pocket and leave 6 years later with a 90-story, beautiful Adrian Smith-designed tower that is making a fortune for him. Okay, so all of this, Trump doesn't know what he's doing. Trump can't get an ice cream cone to his mouth. This is all baloney. Trump is a brilliant guy. He's operated in any number of governmental systems. In Abu Dhabi and Dubai, Trump is universally loved for the work that he has done there. So I think Trump is smart enough to adapt to these situations. And I put that up against Hillary. People say, oh, Trump is horrendous. You see these things. I get these all the time from my liberal friends about some article in The Atlantic or something. Trump is the end of Western civilization. You know what? Hillary Clinton is the end of Western civilization because she's looked the American people in the eye repeatedly over the last 25 years and lied repeatedly. That is the end of civilization.
Jeannie?
Let's just play with this a little bit, because when people think about, you know, make America safe again, and they think about their own security, it really kind of goes beyond security in a personal sense, a protective nature. It also goes to the heart of what's the opposite of security. It's being unsecure. And unsecure economically would be the same thing. And so when people talk about make America safe again, it's also making Americans secure again. And you know, you'd have to talk about internationally. Why aren't we fueling freedom, like Stephen Moore wrote in his book? Why aren't we doing that? Instead, we've got Hillary Clinton basically saying we're going to put coal miners and coal companies out of business. Well, that doesn't make people feel safe and secure. And certainly not those miners. So when you're talking about this in a global sense, look, part of what he needs to do is align interests. And I think Trump is going to be much better at aligning interest, and Hillary is much more divisive in that way.
So what happens when Trump doesn't accomplish – I mean, you might disagree. I don't think a wall is getting built that Mexico is paying for. I don't think all Muslims are being kept from entering the country. I don't think we're going to be monitoring mosques. My point is, what happens when all of these promises that are exciting a lot of people to vote for him, it doesn't happen?
People will get disappointed the way they got disappointed in Obama. So Trump has got to keep an eye on what he's promising. But I'll tell you something. His statement – I didn't agree with the blanket ban on Muslims. And I think that he has revised it now so that it's a ban on Muslims from places that we cannot know what the heck is going on. And I think we have to admit the reality. You've got Hillary Clinton tweeting, Muslim, you know, the Muslim religion has nothing to do with any of these terrorist attacks. She's out of her mind. She's out of her mind.
You're saying the Muslim religion does have, what are you saying?
Has the Muslim religion, and my son goes to the university in a Muslim country, okay? And I have Muslim friends, and I talk with them about this stuff all the time. By the way, to a person, they're afraid of Hillary Clinton, and they prefer Donald Trump. But you are talking about a situation in which Angela Merkel herself is having to come back from her support for open borders because of the crime wave and because of the nascent terrorist cells and nodes that she has introduced into Germany because of open borders. And we see what's happened in France. We see what's happened in Belgium. We see what's happened in the UK. And it's going to happen here even more unless Trump is elected.
Like it or not, when you tell America that you're going to build a wall, they feel more secure. They feel more, again, economically secure against illegal immigrants that are taking their jobs, whether or not that's true or not, guest workers or not. They feel that way. And they also feel personally more secure knowing who's coming into the country.
Philip, that is how people win elections. They play on – I'm not a Trump comment. It's an anybody comment. But people play on fear, and that gets them elected.
They do. And it didn't work for John McCain. It didn't work for Mitt Romney. I don't think it'll work for Donald Trump in the way that people think. I think there'll be some sober assessments of people going, okay, who's going to do the least amount of harm to me? Not what are they going to do for me? Because if people look to politicians to do something for them, then they're insane. It's who's going to do the most damage to me. And that's the person that I need to vote against, based along whatever your interests are.
It's not the same. 2016 is far different looking across the landscape than 2008 when Barack Obama was running. You know, you've got numerous domestic terrorist attacks in our country. You've got people that are murdering our cops on the street. The situation is far different, and people are concerned about their security. You've got unemployment that, if you really look at people that are really working, if you take in the full scope of it, you've got people that are underemployed, and you have still high unemployment. So, there's all this uncertainty.
We don't have high unemployment. That's just not
yes,
true.
Yes, we do. We have less people 5%. Working now. No, we have less people that are actually participating in the workforce. So when you consider
you
the participation of the workforce.
You don't get to have that both ways.
Because we have lost millions out of the workforce because they can't find work, so they've chosen to just not participate.
All right, and this is why Democrats and Republicans disagree about certain issues. There are more than one way to look at these statistics. We're going to take a break. But when we come back to Beyond the Beltway, we're going to be joined by Bruce. He is live in Cleveland. He's got another interview for us, and we're going to ask him questions. If you have questions, call in at 800-723-8289. We'll be right back.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
You're listening to Beyond the Beltway, coming to you live from Chicago and Cleveland. And once again, tonight's guest host, Paul Lisnick.
All right, thank you, Bruce. And indeed, Bruce Dumont is live in Cleveland with this report.
Bruce Dumont reporting from Cleveland, and we're talking to
Richard Sneed.
Richard, you are from Tennessee, and you were for Donald Trump. You were for Donald Trump early. Why?
Well, because I recognized a leader when I saw one, and it was very clear he was a patriot.
Tennessee is regarded nationally as sort of a moderate Republican state. Those people who live in Tennessee who may not be fans of Donald Trump, have you heard a lot from them that maybe they're going to sit on the sidelines?
Very few. There's some, obviously. And we're from the Oak Ridge area, which, of course, has its in its heritage the Manhattan Project, and an awful lot of Americans from all over the country. So it's they're the descendants of those who came for the Manhattan Project. And so they're from all over the country. Some of the smartest people in the country came there. And therefore, you have a very diverse set of views in our county, in Anderson County. But Anderson County has been a bellwether forever in many elections because of this diversity. And so you hear an awful lot of talk, but I think he's converting an awful lot of people.
Every 4 years, both parties try to make the case that that year is so pivotal. It's being made again this year. Is this year special than previous years?
Well, I think that many people, including myself, believe it because, you know, if you just contrast the kinds of things that Mr. Trump has said against what's been said by other candidates in the past, you begin to realize how things in the country have changed from when we were kids, how so much has changed, which is why his message has resonated. It's like these are the things we are thinking. Now we have a guy who's actually saying that. And occasionally he says a few other things, and, you know, you scratch your head, but he's a businessman, not a politician, and I think a lot of people, including me, have been willing to cut him a little bit of slack in some of those cases.
Richard, thanks very much. The voice of Tennessee this evening. I'm Bruce Dumont reporting live from Cleveland.
And, you know, Bruce, it's really interesting. As you talk to Richard, my mind was filled with these people of never Trump. We've got to stop Trump. Richard would suggest, and I know that movement is officially sort of over within the convention. Is there any remnants of it left, or is Richard representative of what you're hearing on the ground?
Well, it's what I'm hearing on the ground, as well as the sour grapes I referenced in the first report. The people that are here obviously are dedicated. In fact, just a few moments ago, I was talking to Holly Gerard. Holly Gerard is a major political strategist in the great state of Oklahoma. In fact, she worked for the Cruz campaign and helped engineer his victories in Oklahoma and Kansas. And she was a staunch Ted Cruz supporter, and she still likes Ted Cruz, but she is rallying around the flag. She thinks that at least the people that she deals with in the Sooner State understand that this is Trump's moment, and that the stakes are high, and that ultimately people will come back and enthusiastically support the ticket, even though maybe some of them are still lukewarm at this particular moment.
Hey, Bruce, this is Jeannie here. You know, I'm just thinking about what type of minority representation have you noticed so far at the convention? I mean, I honestly think that we've got a pretty diverse group of Republicans these days, and I think that I think people would be surprised at how diverse of a group is actually supporting Donald Trump and his policies. Have you noticed anything so far?
I have not picked up any sense either in the, although I spoke today with several African-American leaders or representatives from the Illinois delegation, alternates and delegates who were African-American. But here at this rally this evening, I do not see a lot of minority representation here. There was a large group of Chinese-Americans who love Donald Trump from Los Angeles. But again, no, this is, at least at this party tonight, I don't see a level of diversity that I may see when, you know, they're all in their chairs at the Q Center, you know, tomorrow night.
Yeah, I just like to remark, I mean, there was an African-American gentleman that was really going all around my county, DuPage County, which is what people would think is your typical white Republican county. And he was the Trump, he was the Trump guy in our county, and he showed up everywhere. And, you know, I thought that was fabulous.
Bruce.
Well, again, I think the one thing, one of the major speakers tomorrow night is going to be the father of a young man who was murdered by an illegal immigrant. I saw him at the speech when Donald Trump kicked off his California campaign several months ago where the rioting broke out. And he will have a prime spot tomorrow. He's been on a number of shows here out of Cleveland, local and national shows already. And when he tells his story, I mean, it is a very emotional story of a man who says that this is a perfect example of what happens when our current immigration system and our current enforcement against those illegal immigrants goes awry. And so that's the message. Immigration is the key issue for, you know, the first night of the convention tomorrow night.
So lawlessness versus law and order.
Bruce, I want to get to you on this issue, and this might be inside baseball, but we have seen Trump move closer to the so-called Republican establishment as we have come closer to the convention. And obviously, Reince Priebus put all of the chips of the Republican National Committee behind Trump in the obscure meetings of some of these substantive committees that were going on last week.
Right.
What do you see that turning into a real partnership? What is the vitality of that link up between the establishment and Trump?
I think it's still at the moment a romance. I wouldn't say that it's totally together, but I think the sense that I picked up in conversations is that, you know, I mentioned sour grapes a couple of times. The point is, when people get closer to election day, I think it's easy, in fact, we had some guests last week on the television show. I guess it's easy if you're a Republican right now to say you're going to be for Gary Johnson, you're going to sit on your hands. But I think as you get closer to election day, as the debates happen, as the partisanship starts to spew out of the mouth of not only Hillary Clinton, but all of the Democrats, when they start, when some Republicans start hearing that, I think it's going to get to their bones, and I think they will ultimately, at the last moment,
all right. And Bruce, I know you're finishing your answer. We are not hearing you. We've lost the connection to you. So we're gonna go on and pick up the conversation. Call us back. We'll get you back in, of course, if you can. But we're going to pick up the conversation as well. Chris, what we did here, were you getting the answer from Bruce you expected?
Yeah, that it's a romance. It's not yet a marriage, that they're sort of checking each other out. I think it's very important. Trump came into this convention without as much money as Mitt Romney had when he went into his convention in Tampa. Trump had not created the internal fundraising infrastructure. And there are folks in the Republican Party who said, look, fun's fun. This is serious. And that is why General Kelly got jettisoned. You know, he stepped on a landmine saying, I am pro-choice. 27 hours later, he says, no, I was confused. I'm really pro-life. Okay, General Kelly is a Democrat. He was kicked right the heck out of here. And you saw the evolution of the Pence selection.
All right, Bruce Dumont, you're back. So I was going to move on unless you want to finish up what you were saying, Bruce, before we lost you.
No, I just think that at the end, a lot of Republicans who right now are saying they're not going to be for Trump will eventually come around at the end. But right now, they've got 112 days to talk like that. But when they go into the polls, I think they may change their mind.
And Bruce, I wanted to ask you, tomorrow night's speakers include the person you're talking about, Jamil Shaw Sr., also Senator Tom Cotton, Rudy Giuliani, Senator Joni Ernst. I get all of that. But every night we're going to get a member of Trump's family. Tomorrow night we're getting his wife, Melania. Does that mean that within the scope of the theme of the evening, we're still going to get the introduction to why Donald Trump is the right person to address it?
I think that will be the case. And I think the one thing that even those who are critical of Trump have said thus far in the last, 9 months since he's been a candidate, everyone seems to like the family. They appreciate that the family, they're smart, they look good, they present themselves well. They're obviously, children who love their father. And it gives Donald Trump sort of the softer side. And I think that, you have to play with your strength. And I think the strength of that team right at the moment is the family as much as it is Donald Trump. In fact, maybe the family is even more expansive than Donald Trump and makes him gives him a little softer edge.
Bruce, I'm shooting a little bit ahead toward the end of the convention and next week. I imagine that Trump will get a bump in the sort of national polling, the post-convention bump, especially if he has a great speech on Thursday. Will it be an indicator if he doesn't get that kind of bump that they would be in trouble?
I think that's always a possibility. I think one of the key things is going to be between now and Thursday night when Donald Trump speaks is how does he address what happened in Louisiana? How does he address what happened in Dallas? How does he address some of the concerns that African Americans have around the country, as he did? He referenced them when he made his comments following the assassinations in Dallas. That's going to be important because, yes, he wants to be the law and order candidate, but he has to say it in a way that is both strong and yet understanding. He's going to be a president that can bring the nation together, because whoever wins in November is going to face probably the most hostile electorate the next day than anyone in our lifetime.
Bruce, just one more thing. Have you seen any of the prior presidential candidates around? Are they having their own little get-togethers with supporters, or what's going on in that sense?
No, very few. In fact, at this party, normally where you have a lot of governors and senators and people running around, I would say that this is a party for the delegates, and I have not yet seen the VIP crowd at this gathering, which, again, I want to just say is really it's the most well-run. This is a terrific event that they're having here at the RNC in the shadow of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Science Museum on Lake Erie.
All right, Bruce Dumont, so glad that you could spend time with us while you are in Cleveland doing the work at the Republican National Convention. Appreciate all the insight from you. Have a good time. Bring us all souvenirs, will you?
It's always great to be on Beyond the Beltway.
Yeah, especially when you host it. Thank you, Bruce. We're going to take a brief break, but we will be back with more conversation with Representative Jeannie Ives, Chris Roebling, Philip Beverly, and you if you call in at 1-800-723-8289. I'm Paul Lisnick. We'll be right back.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 11 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
You're listening to Beyond the Beltway, coming to you live from Chicago and Cleveland. And once again, tonight's guest host, Paul Lisnick.
All right. Thank you, Bruce Dumont. You know, every election year, there's something I think most people have heard of this. It's known as the October surprise, right? We seem to be getting it every week now where something happens somewhere in the world, some little surprise, like, oh, there goes another country, you know, up in arms. Something's happening. But this concept of October surprise has been around for a long time. Well, we've got a caller on the line. He's Brian. He's in Roselle. He actually thinks he might know what the October surprise might be. I think it might be interesting to hear him. Hey, Brian.
Hey, guys. Good evening. You know, I'm a political junkie, and this season is just absolutely wild on so many levels. And what I would like to throw on the table is I'd like to point out there are some very big players at the table for choosing the next American president, and they are Vladimir Putin, the government of China, maybe even North Korea, and probably Iran. And the reason they're at the table is because of Hillary Clinton's illegal email server that she set up. And Comey with the FBI said that, you know, she was extremely careless. She used her BlackBerry in foreign countries where intelligence agencies...
Wait, Brian, just wait. I just want to... Well, listen, I hear you, but I'm losing the connection here. James Comey is the director of the FBI, but I'm losing the connection. We went from Vladimir Putin at the table of selecting the president to Hillary Clinton's emails. What are you saying?
They have all of her email.
And therefore, what are they going to do about it? What are they doing about it?
It will choose if they want to discredit Hillary and put Trump in office, they will release damning evidence against Hillary. If they want Hillary to be president, then they will sit on the information. It's plain as day.
Well, so here's
that they have it all.
Brian, all right, I appreciate that. And here's an issue I'm going to take from Brian's comment and raise this question. I think what he's saying is not an October surprise. But he does make an interesting point, and I actually should come to you, Philip, about this, because, look, Hillary got off easy. I mean, as I was watching James Comey give his description of what went on, I thought, oh, my goodness, here comes an indictment. This is for 75% of what he said.
He violated first-year law school.
Recommend an indictment. It didn't go there.
You are a law professor.
So I expected him to be saying
how many people have been convicted of crimes without mens rea?
Well, look. This is a specific – let's not get into the law here, but this is a specific intent crime. I understand what you're saying, and mens rea refers to mental state. But, Philip, let me ask you, because you're the Democrat on the panel here, even you have to agree it was Hillary's lucky day.
I saw her doing the Keanu Reeves thing from The Matrix as the bullets were
picking the blue pill.
No, the bullets are going by, and she's dodging all of them. And I thought, okay, there's something bigger here at work protecting her.
Comey's ambition.
I don't know if it's ambition.
I actually think, you know what, Chris, Gene, chime in. I think it was James Comey saying to himself, I am not going to be the guy who is going to change the course of history, right? Because what story comes out of that? The director of the FBI suggests that they, because it wouldn't be his decision, suggests that Hillary Clinton get indicted, and the entire shape of the national election changes. He didn't want to be that guy.
He whiffed. That's called cowardice.
Look, his job is to be the umpire. He's supposed to call balls and strikes and then send it up the chain of command. That's what he's supposed to do. He wasn't the jury. He wasn't anything other than the guy who decides whether or not this is sufficient to charge. And I think he did a real disservice to everybody who's an American, because we all just expect to be treated equally under the law, and she wasn't. That's the truth.
If Jeannie, I can tell you, you know that I worked for the government when I was a kid, and if I had done anything like Hillary,
if I had done this with my security clearance in the military, forget it.
Okay, and let's not kid ourselves. At the very least, it established in stone that there are two sets of rules, one for all of us and another for the Clintons.
Philip, I don't know that it's just for the Clintons. I mean, seriously, I think it's for elites in a political system.
I go there. I don't think it's about Hillary Clinton. I just think anybody had been in that. It could have been John Kerry. It could have been anybody else. This is about you're part of the power structure of the government and you get a pass.
That's right. In fact, all of her subordinates are probably part of the problem, and it sounds like they're going to get a pass, too. So this is deeper than Hillary Clinton. This is her entire entourage that worked with her, too. They're all culpable here.
And let's understand. And when you need the trust of law enforcement, and the FBI director sort of goes, well, yeah, you shouldn't have done that, but we're not going to do anything because you're who you are.
Well, he didn't say, if James Comey were here right now, what he would say, you got to go with what he said. He said, I did not find, she was careless, she was a mess, I did not find specific intent to commit a crime.
You don't need intent for gross negligence.
Right,
you did not need intent for gross negligence. He whiffed on this.
And number two, Helen Keller could have seen intent.
Listen,
what is she doing when she says, I'm going to take Bill's server and make it my server?
That's
what is
right.
she doing when she's getting a campaign guy hired by the United States Department of State to actually effectuate that plan? What is she doing when she's destroying 30,000 emails? There is intent to Z.
The intent isn't about whether or not she recognized an email as classified or not. The intent came by setting up the entire situation to begin with. That was intentional.
Well, I'm not sure about that, Jeannie, because that is intentional sloppy. But I don't think she said to herself, I'm now going to violate the law by setting this up.
What she did say was, I want to set up a system in which not my personal emails are absolutely protected. That's on the record with Huma. That was intent. So
that's
you got intent all over the place. And basically, I still think there are two things out there which are not going to be resolved, but there are two things out there. Number one, what about the Clinton Foundation? It was a pay-to-play scheme beginning to end, and it still is. And number two, you've got to look at this public records. You know, Jeannie and I have worked together on some reform efforts. Without FOIA, without access to public records, there can be no reform because you don't know what the corrupt government has been doing. Okay? And she has obliterated 30,000 emails that are originally the property of the United States people.
And we're back to where we started earlier on in this conversation in this show when we basically said Hillary Clinton may be her own worst enemy here. And the ads are already out there. All you have to do is juxtapose Hillary Clinton saying, I only had one device, with James Comey saying, no, she had many, and on and on.
I've got to say, she was so dumb that she's in Moscow for meetings with the so-called Putin reset with Lavrov, and she was using her insecure BlackBerry. Then she goes to Beijing and she's meeting with Chinese officials and she doesn't even understand.
Philip, is that disqualifying?
Absolutely, it's disqualifying. I'll tell you it's disqualifying.
I don't know if it disqualifies her.
Well, it didn't apparently because
she's still here. I think both of these candidates, what we should say after, let's say 114 days from now, what we should begin to look at is, what has our political system degenerated to that these would be the two best candidates from the two major parties in our country?
Well, a lot of people are asking that, Jenny.
Phil, I really like you, but you're just changing the topic here when we need to talk about the fact that she is disqualified. I mean, James Comey also said people who have done things of this nature have specific consequences. Those include losing your security clearance. So how can she sit there as commander-in-chief?
Well, he did say that if she were still in the government – And there could be those kinds of risks.
I'll tell you what. She would not be hired by the FBI, the CIA, or anybody else. She couldn't be hired by the military. She would never be given a security clearance in the future. And yet people think that she could not qualify.
She couldn't qualify for what we call company confidential. So I worked for the government, and I had top secret. When I switched over to a Beltway Bandit, I had company confidential in a day because I had top secret. Today, she would not qualify for company confidential at a Beltway Bandit, let alone going to work for the Defense Intelligence Agency and getting top secret, let alone anything above that.
So, Philip, once again, it suggests, are people going to the polls and they're saying, I can't deal with Hillary, so I'm voting for Trump, or vice versa, I can't live with Trump, so I'm going to deal with this Hillary problem and vote for her?
I think there's going to be zealous supporters on both sides. I think they're the minority on both sides. And I think the majority of both Republican and Democratic voters will hold their noses and vote for their candidates.
And I think that this election is really going to hinge on turnout, because I think there's people that are so upset with both candidates that it's going to be who can turn out their base, who can flip the independents, and what are the issues that are foremost in front of people that are actually going to vote. And I think that is going to be security and it's going to be economics. Those
so
are the two things.
You're absolutely
right,
but Chris Roebling, you know the polls. African Americans, 83-7 for Clinton. Hispanics. I mean, how does Donald Trump make headway and regain? You still got to get people to vote for him.
Well, no. It's not 83-7, and this is why you have Black Lives Matter doing what it's doing. Because it is a Democrat turnout front organization. And so what – it's not a question of 80 –
it's become that? It's only been around for 2 years, Chris. Come on now. Let's get the data right.
When 83-7 is a dispersion within a particular subsegment of the population, but it doesn't speak to the absolute total. What propelled Obama to victory – was extraordinary levels of turnout. So it's not just the split, it's the absolute, it's not just the relationship, the ratio, it's the absolute number. And that's what she's got to get. Now, Trump goes around and says stupid things and hurts him. You know, he loads the gun, finds a toe, and pulls the gosh darn trigger.
He says he could shoot somebody in the middle of Times Square. It wouldn't cost him a vote, Jeannie.
Well, that's true. Well, but, I mean, look, he also has exceeded the primary turnout over Mitt Romney from our side. So, I mean, he's generating new people.
System.
New people are excited about him. And I think the Hispanic vote is going to be interesting. I mean, we know that he needs to get about over 30% in order to kind of win that group sufficiently to win the presidency. There's various polls that say he's way under that.
So when you're talking about deporting, when you're going to deport 11 million people
and build the wall. All right, but here's the deal. Legal immigrants, people who have come to this country legally, and I just spoke with one the other day, basically says, I'm actually going to get my citizenship and I'm going to get to vote because I'm so upset with how things are going. She's a Trump voter, and she's a legal immigrant who has just not taken the final step after being here 30 years. Those are the people that are the voters. Those are going to be the ones that are going to turn out. And I think you're going to find that on the Hispanic side, too. Legal Hispanic population is going to vote for him.
All right. When we come back, I want to get your impression. You know, there is one branch of government that isn't supposed to make news per se. It's the judges. It's the Supreme Court. Until they do. I'm going to get my panel's take on Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's comments about Donald Trump when we come back. It's Beyond the Beltway.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
You're listening to Beyond the Beltway, coming to you live from Chicago and Cleveland. And once again, tonight's guest host, Paul Lisnick.
All right, Bruce Dumont, thank you. And thanks for your reporting this evening from Cleveland. Great stuff from you. So Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, typically justices stay out of the political fray. Not always. Scalia went hunting with Dick Cheney. So sometimes they get in the mess of things. But Justice Ginsburg this past week made some comments about Donald Trump that ultimately culminated with her saying she's moving to New Zealand if he is president. She did back off. She didn't apologize. It was reported that she did, but she didn't. Right. What she just said was, I probably shouldn't have said it, and I wouldn't do it again. But are you bothered by a Supreme Court justice chiming in?
Well, I think it's inappropriate, and I think that Associate Justice Ginsburg has said that herself, and hopefully it won't happen again. And I think that, unfortunately, it reflects a couple of things, Trump derangement syndrome, but it also reflects, in my opinion, the unfortunate entry of the court into the day-to-day political life of the nation. And so the more it is in the political life of the nation and the less it is in the legal life of the nation, the more involved it is. And you get things like President Obama calling out the court at one of his State of the Union speeches when they're sitting right there.
That was over Citizens United.
Over Citizens United. Well,
with Justice Alito.
Didn't Alito roll his eyes?
He shook his head no.
And that became a big firestorm, and then Ginsburg gets a pass.
And Ginsburg gets a pass. I mean, so
nothing happened to Alito.
No,
I mean,
Alito. Yes, hold on. That's wrong. That's wrong.
No, Alito actually got called out by the press.
Alito was the subject of vicious, absolutely vicious attacks from the left for a week or 10 days, and it was replayed continuously on MSNBC
but
and
that,
other.
That's not what I say. Nothing happened to him. I mean, there was no Supreme Court justices can get away with anything. The rules don't apply to
them.
I'm
sorry, Paul. You're viewing this through your lens, and I'm here to tell you as a conservative, he was attacked for 10 days for what he did. And by the way, he was right because Obama was reciting the holding of the court, and Obama got that wrong for political purposes. We all understand. And he was saying, no, that's not what it said. But he was right. And here Ginsburg admits that she was wrong. And if you blinked, you missed the whole Ginsburg.
Well, I just first of all, by the way, the lens I'm looking at, what I'm referring to, is the legal lens. That is to say, nothing happened in terms of ethics violations. That's what I'm referring to. She was taken down by the New York Times of all papers for that. So it did happen. Let me switch gears, Philip, and let me ask you. One of the possibilities is that Judge Merrick Garland, who is the Obama appointment to replace Scalia, Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader of the Senate, says not happening. The next president will decide who the nominee is going to be, which, by the way, I think he's just wrong anyway. From a legal standpoint, that's just wrong. I don't care who the president is, whatever. The president gets to make an appointment. But that said, I also think, and tell me what you think, that if Hillary Clinton is elected president, McConnell will find some way to reverse, and all of a sudden he never meant what he said, and Garland gets a hearing.
Absolutely. After the election, if Hillary wins, that's one appointment that can be taken away from her. Because I would be willing to bet you that if McConnell stuck to that, she would find the most liberal justice she could find, the most controversial that she could find to just throw it in their face.
Jeannie, you're a legislator, so you understand that legislators have jobs to do and responsibilities. U.S. senator's job is to have a hearing and take a vote. Can you defend the action at all to not even have a hearing on Merrick Garland?
I can only defend it from the standpoint that you've had examples in the past where they've held off on making that type of appointment.
They always had the hearing. Even when Obama, they go after Obama about the time he wasn't going to support Alito, but they had the hearing.
They have a lame duck situation here, and they just felt
He had a year to go in his term.
I'll tell you what, with a Trump-Hillary matchup, look, you're looking at a 50-50 chance that your guy wins or not. So it's not really a comfortable position for Republicans to find themselves in right now. And so maybe hindsight 2020, they would have had the hearing. Who knows? Not knowing.
Chris Robley, that way, let's go to, what if Mike Madigan said, something, Rauner's a lame duck. He only has 3 years to go. We're not going to,
He's already said that. He's acting that way.
So my point is, and I realize you would disagree with him. So, I mean, senators have a job to do. Shouldn't they hold the hearing?
When they want to.
Okay.
And then vote him
down. So you bet you're perfectly fine. Yeah, and then vote him down if you want to vote him down.
And in fact, if you know the workings of the court, you know that this has had precious little impact on the court, and it's not going to have any
now,
impact.
Now, what do you mean? The absence of Scalia, the eight justices, has had a tremendous impact on the court.
Actually, no.
You're getting four to four decisions and no clarification on a host of areas.
Actually, when you take a look at the timing of the Garland appointment and you look at when he was going to come in, it's going to have very little impact on the court. I'm not talking about.
Yeah, but you're now talking about impact for another term.
Yeah, I'm looking prospectively. You're looking retrospectively, and I don't deny. When Scalia died at an inconvenient time, but as we all know from our family member, everybody chooses to die at exactly the wrong time. Okay, but Scalia is no different. But looking forward, it has very little impact on the functioning of the court, and I don't think it is a big deal at all. And I think that the Senate has every bit of authority to decide its own agenda.
You teach courses in this, Philip. You agree?
I totally disagree. I would have preferred that the Senate hold the hearings, vote them down, tell the president, send your next one up. We'll hold another hearing and vote him down, too. But do your job.
Okay, but the Constitution doesn't require the time frame. There's no time frame requirement in the Constitution for the Senate to hold these hearings. There's no time frame requirement.
But it's why nothing ever gets
it's done.
Done.
That's the point.
That's why
Congress has an approval rating of 8% because they won't do its job.
And this is what election's about. So people need to make a decision whether or not they like the do-nothing Congress or not, whether or not you like Hillary or Trump. This is what elections are about. They're about making choices, and then you have to live with them.
Well, I think that I want to apply this thing about working with each other. I think that the Obama administration, which will be coming to a close here in 6 or 7 months, blessedly, is going to have to be evaluated by history. And I believe that when they
20 years from now.
Well, right. I mean, it's going to start. It starts. And I believe that what you're going to find is that Obama had the worst relations with Congress. And it's not because of what Mitch McConnell said. It is because the Obama administration would state a position and refuse to negotiate.
And they're lawless. Executive order lawlessness.
All right. And that's why these conversations continue. And that's why we need 5 more hours on the show. But Bruce Dumont won't give it to us tonight. I do want to take a moment to thank my guest, Professor Philip Beverly, Representative Jeannie Ives, and WGN Republican analyst Chris Roebling for coming in this Sunday, to Bruce Dumont for his reports and from the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. Beyond the Beltway is a Genevieve production. I also want to thank Colin Bobbitt, Fritz Goldman, Dan Dorfman for their assistance in getting this program on the air. I'm Paul Lisnick, substituting for Bruce. Good night from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger. And I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels. Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Saturdays at 4:30 and Sundays at 11 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman. Miss Lewinsky, I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.